if you could start by stating your name, your current position, and your field of study.
My name is Michael Wong, and I just graduated this year from Caltech with a degree in planetary science, and now I'm a postdoc at the University of Washington in Seattle in their astronomy department and astrobiology program.
Very nice. And what first got you interested in science?
I've been interested in science for a very long time. When I was a kid, I was really inspired by my favorite science fiction show, which was Star Trek. And so I got into space science that way. And when I got to college, I wanted to major in astrobiology because I wanted to know that question, the answer to the question, are we alone in the universe? Astrobiology is not a very common major, so where I went to school, UC Berkeley, didn't have an astrobiology program. So I thought, well, if I can't study aliens, I might as well try to study where aliens might live. So I decided to major in planetary science, and I followed that through through college and through grad school. And finally, I've arrived at a place where there is actually an astrobiology program, so I'm very excited to take my planetary science knowledge and try to explore the universe from the perspective of looking for life and understanding how it arises.
And what are you working on now, and what does a typical day look like?
So I just started a new project at the University of Washington, and the idea is trying to understand abiotic oxygen arising on Venus-like exoplanets. So we always think of oxygen as a really good biosignature because there's plenty of oxygen in our atmosphere, which is the part of exoplanets that we're most sensitive to with the current telescopes and upcoming telescopes as well. So because there's so much oxygen in our atmosphere and it's created almost exclusively by life, we think that that would be a really good telltale signature of life on another planet. But other planets may have different processes, other stars shine different wavelengths of light that may influence those planets' atmospheres and create oxygen not from life. So I'm studying what controls the rise of abiotic oxygen and the amount of abiotic oxygen on planets that look like Venus but around different stars. So Venus has a lot of CO2, and so CO2 has two atoms of oxygen in that molecule. And if you break apart CO2, you can make a lot of oxygen, and so our planet, our sister planet Venus, has a bunch of CO2 that is constantly being broken apart, but that CO2 is being regenerated by these chemical cycles in Venus's atmosphere, and my job is to basically try to understand how those chemical cycles work for a planet very much like Venus, but around an M dwarf star. That's the dimmest, reddest, actually most common type of star in the galaxy. And so understanding what creates oxygen abiotically is really critical to interpreting potential upcoming observations of oxygen in exoplanet atmospheres.
Very cool. Has there been something particularly exciting or surprising that you've found in your work so far, or one moment in your career that's just been personally exciting?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'd have to say that this work is very new, so I only started it 2 months ago. So I don't have any results yet to share. But a moment in my career that was exciting. What's a good moment? That's such a great question. let's see. Well, I'll think back. Can we come back to that one?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Have you had any challenges in your work? And have you dealt with them?
Okay. So I would say, my work has definitely been challenging for me. What I mainly do to study the atmospheres of exoplanets is use computer models. And computer modeling can be very draining for me. It's a lot of typing into a terminal on a computer, and somehow the numbers that you're typing are supposed to describe a planet out there, a planet that we have not observed yet, a planet that we can't see with our eyes. Even when we do get data from these exoplanets, it's not like we have a nice picture of them. And so sometimes it's very hard to translate my day-to-day work into something that really sparks my imagination, and something that that I can just, you know, wake up and be super passionate for, because I know I'm just going to go and stare at numbers on my laptop. And so something that helps me get reinvigorated about my own science is to do teaching and outreach, because with that I get to show the big picture again, why I'm doing the work that I'm doing, and I get to see people's faces light up when I discuss the planets and show artists' renditions of these planets. That's something that, you know, you don't really do in day-to-day work when you're in the nitty-gritty of code, but when you get to back up and say, oh, these are really profound questions that we're seeking the answers to, and you get other people excited in asking those questions too, and being curious themselves, that powers me through my own work, and I really love that.
And do you feel like your work and your focus on exoplanets changes your outlook on life or perspective? Like, for me, when I interned at AGU and I saw my first member scientist speak and they spoke about the universe, it was so different for me coming from a marine science perspective, where you think about humans on Earth, but then you think about Earth in the grand scheme of the universe, and it causes this total shift where it's like, wow, there's really so much out there. In the grand scheme of things, we're really, you know, one creature on one planet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Taking a planetary perspective is really like a fundamental aspect of my experience on Earth, because I've studied planets for so long, such a long portion of my life. I really feel that kind of connection to the universe, and it's both very humbling, but then also very empowering. So there's many ways that you can see the same underlying scientific facts, and I think that's where we bring our human experience and the humanities and the creation of narratives and meaning to what we've been discussing and the science that we've been engaging in. And so, yeah, you're totally right. When you look at Earth as such a small little mote of dust, as Carl Sagan put it, in this vast cosmic void almost, you know, space is mostly empty, and the space between different planets is huge, and the space between planetary systems is even larger. You start thinking about how small and almost insignificant we are in the grand scheme of things, but by looking out into outer space and studying other planets, the formation processes that brought other planets and other stars into existence, and then being able to tell those same tales for our story. So like when we look out there, I really feel like our story is reflected back at us in the stars and the nebulae and the galaxies and the planets that we're observing. And so we learn a lot about ourselves, and in that way we can feel very connected to the entire universe, to the story of the unfolding and the evolving nature of the universe from the Big Bang all the way until now. And that's super empowering too, to realize all of the steps and processes and amazing events that had to take place in order for us to be here, and how the same chemical elements that are in our bodies are being created in the hearts of stars out there. That's just so inspiring to me, to just realize that, yeah, we're star stuff. Like, that's great. We're a part of this whole tale. And so in that way we can feel big too. And so, you know, feeling small, feeling big, they have complementary aspects to life. And I think just having that perspective, and when you're feeling down, you know, you can say like, I'm made of star stuff. And when you think maybe you're getting a little too ahead of yourself, you can remind yourself, look, We're just a single person out of 7 billion on this planet that's orbiting this regular star. It's going around the Milky Way. You know, so it's all part of the human experience, and I think it's wonderful the stories that science has been able to tell us.
That's really beautiful.
Thanks.
So now that we're here, approaching 100 years, and this is the Centennial Project, is there anything from the past 100 years of science that's really captivated you or impressed you, or do you have any thoughts on the next 100 years of science?
Yeah, well, so I'm not 100 years old, so the amount of science that I've observed in my lifetime has been very small, but reading about my field of planetary science and also the discoveries in biology too, that I've been trying to learn more about because I want to get into astrobiology. It's so remarkable to me how fast these fields have moved in the past couple of decades. So planetary science is a field that is not much more than 50 years old. And a lot of modern biology is also about that same age. So like we discovered DNA, 1950s, and we sent our first space probes also around the same decade. And so I feel like we have learned so much in a very short amount of time. And it's a really exciting time to be a planetary scientist and an astrobiologist, because I think that right now, for the first time in human history, we possess, our generation possesses the technological capability and the knowledge to interpret what that technology might bring back to us from other planets to actually find life elsewhere in the universe. And it's thanks to a combination of the very microscopic biology that we know now and the big picture planetary science and spacecraft missions that we have now. So my hope is that in the next 100 years, and hopefully also in my lifetime, that we will actually be that first generation to know the answer to the question, are we alone in the universe?
That would be a really cool thing to find out in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I just think about the last few years of news in planetary science and what we've discovered, and maybe even like just the last 5 years. To try to project that forward is kind of like if I try to think of what the world must look like to a mantis shrimp, which can see so many more colors than we can see, and I just can't fathom it, but it'll be exciting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to share, or
let's see. So, yeah, it's hard to narrow it down to, like, one moment that really, like, one scientific moment, because I don't know, I guess I really haven't had like an aha moment yet, but I guess the closest thing maybe at AGU in, what year was it? Maybe it was 2014 or 2015. I was getting bored of the planetary science sessions, and I went upstairs. This was in Moscone, so an old layout. The atmospheric sciences were upstairs, and I just like popped into some random atmospheric science lecture hall, and I heard this really amazing talk by Professor David Romps at UC Berkeley, where he was talking about anthropogenic climate change and the influence of global warming on the lightning flash rate on Earth. And that really caught my attention because I was trying to understand the origin of life on early Earth, which lightning may have played a very important role on too. But I had no idea how to estimate how much lightning there was on a 4 billion year old Earth. But what I learned in this random atmospheric science session that I just popped into because I was bored of the planetary science stuff was that David Romps had come up with a new way to estimate the amount of lightning in Earth's future by a novel scaling law that he had derived. And so he was thinking about going into the future as Earth warms, and I was like, well, why don't I just use that but go backwards in time? So I took that scaling law and I cited him in the paper that we ended up writing, and it was all because of AGU, and all because this place is such a huge and diverse conference where you can literally walk into any room and learn something new. And that really helps. That helped my research because I was stuck on this problem of lightning on early Earth for such a long time and trying to understand the origin of life, and I got that insight from AGU. So I guess that was a kind of cool moment in my scientific career.
That was a fortunate event to walk into that session.
Yeah.
This is actually my first AGU conference.
Oh, awesome.
When I interned in 2011, I helped set up some of the press conferences, but my internship ended right before fall meeting, mm-hmm. So it's exciting to see what it's actually like.
Yeah, it's really huge, and I was used to the San Francisco location, which I was at for many, many years, and so, you know, that got easier to, like, navigate because I sort of just knew where everything was, but as it's been changing locations, New Orleans last year and DC this year, it again, like, just hits you and reminds you how much stuff there is here, because you get lost every single day just trying to find your way to where you need to be, and that's just because there's so much stuff, and it's great.
How many years have you been coming to the meeting?
So I think this is my eighth time.
Nice.
Yeah, so I went throughout grad school, which was 6 years. Now I'm a postdoc, and I went once when I was an undergrad, so yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
I don't know. I really love speaking into a microphone. I have a podcast, a Science and Star Trek podcast, because I was inspired by Star Trek, and I love talking about science too. So it's called Strange New Worlds, if you want to check it out. I don't know who will be listening to this or how far in the future. So hopefully you can still find the podcast if it's not still running. I don't know how long it will last. I've been doing it for about a year and a half now. And it's been so much fun.
Cool. I'm going to check that out.
Okay, cool.